words of the prolific Stevie Wonder. Good morning, evening, friends. Welcome back to the Building People Podcast, where we're having edifying conversations about life, ministry, and culture. I am your host, Derek J. Murphy, and I'm so glad to have you with me this week. And before we get to anything else, you know, I always got to start off with the praise report. You know, it's the year 2020, and one would think that hearing about the first black anything would be surprising, yet here we are. This week's praise report is in the form of a shout out to Nicholas Johnson, who has earned the prestigious honor of being the first black valedictorian at Princeton University in its 274-year history. Johnson, who is the 22-year-old son of Jamaican immigrants, has been studying operations research and financial engineering at the university and has gone on to be the top student in one of the nation's most prestigious schools. And even though former First Lady Michelle Obama gave him a shout out, you can now add the Building People Podcast to the shout out list because we are so proud of the work that he's doing and we are praying for his continued success as he pursues his PhD at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Operations Research. You know, things don't always go as planned, and this is one of those wonderful surprises because when I scheduled this interview, I had a particular thing in mind, but we ended up having an even more powerful conversation than expected. And so I want to devote as much time as possible to this conversation that we had with Twisted Wisdom author Victoria Falls Scott. Building People family, this is another day that we are excited to have a guest with us that is creative in her own right. She is, she's got the arts all in her blood and comes from a family of extremely talented people. So what she's doing nowadays really comes as no surprise. I want to welcome to the show Victoria Falls Scott. Thank you for joining us.
Ooh, I'm glad to be here.
Well, one of the first questions that I always ask every guest is, what do you do to build people and why do you do it?
I like building people's ability to see what they have within themselves. Mm-hmm. And the main way to do that is to separate them from all of the excuses that they use to not do that. For a long time, I hid behind a lot of things. And most of the things that I hid behind, as they disappeared, I was still left with my own individual crisis that I had to deal with. And so many times we blame a lot of other things, but in reality, it's ourselves that's holding us back from going to where we need to, you know, need to be. And it's hiding our own talent within. So my thing is to get past all of the excuses and just get down to the grit of who are you? Who are you designed to be? And what was you designed to do?
My goodness, you just jumped right on in there, didn't you? What are some of the excuses that most people that you've talked to and worked with, what are some of the common excuses that we give when it comes to, you know, trying to pursue whatever it is that we want to pursue or become whoever we want to become? What are some of the common excuses?
I would say most of the common excuses that I've seen is the past, disorders, or different people in our life. Mm. And that was one of the biggest things, was different people in our life. So as you know, God began to remove certain people from my life. And it was people that I didn't know how to let go of. Mm. And so as I began to wean off of them, I realized that they were never, ever really an excuse not to do what I wanted to do. It was just much easier to place them in that holder to stop me from being able to move forward. But either way it goes, the underlining excuse behind it, but it's easier to hide behind people that make life complicated, but in reality, they don't stop you.
Wow, that is a huge, big idea that you just said, that it's easier to hide behind people that can complicate our lives, but we can really just do whatever it is we want to do regardless, right?
Right. That's exactly right.
That is a huge idea, because I'm really guilty. I'm guilty. I talked about it on the first episode of this season's podcast, is that I gave myself so many excuses as to why I couldn't do this in this season of my life, why I shouldn't do it, why, because of what other people are doing and how I couldn't compete and all of these types of things. I created all of these narratives in my mind, but when the simple fact is, I just had to just get over myself and just do it. And I think that when we let go of the excuses, like you said, it really frees us to do even more than what we think that we can do. That's good.
Yeah. And I mean, that was really a big thing, because I've had in the past, I would say 3 years, I've had a significant drop of individuals in my life. And a lot of the people I would, you know, help to get to a certain point. And some of them, it would be to a point to where, okay, so I was pushing to do something better at first, but now you're pushing me to do something that I no longer want to do. So the easiest thing for me to do is to get mad at you, because I don't want to deal with the pressure of moving forward. Well, it was easy to see that in somebody else, but then when you turn around and actually see it within yourself, that was when reality really hit me, because I realized not only were people doing it to me, I was doing it to myself.
I'm glad that you have overcome those excuses and overcome that fear to do what you're doing now. And I remember you and I, we grew up in the same church circles. And I remember growing up, we would always see each other sing in different programs and whatnot at church. And so, of course, I know your family is well-versed in the musical arts, and y'all sing like nobody's business. But how did you discover, the writing gene that you have? When did that come about? How did you discover that?
Well, at the particular time, I was living right outside of Austin. We had moved up there. And it was a church that they didn't know I was going to do it, but I was trying to put some things together for their youth, because they had a pretty good, you know, range of youth. So what I wanted to do was develop a skit. And so on Sunday mornings, we would do just mini skits. So I wanted to develop one skit that we can do on a big platform with a musical to try to raise money so that they can actually get a church.
Okay.
So when I started writing in just like a little 80-page notebook, and it ended up being front and back every single page. Within a week, I wrote every page up. It's like once I started writing, I couldn't stop. It was like I was automatically hooked on it. And I wrote probably within that time, I want to say it was like 3 different stories just within a matter of a month.
Wait a minute. You filled an 80-page book front and back in a week?
In 1 week.
My goodness.
The whole thing was filled up. And when I typed it out, it ended up being like 100 and some pages. Mm-hmm. And I never did anything with it. I didn't know what to do with it. I couldn't use it as a short skit for the church because it was too long. So that's when I started looking into, well, what do I need to turn this into a book, or what do I need to turn this into a movie, or a stage play? Those were my 3 options. And that's when I kind of started on the journey of learning how to write movies, stage plays, you know, different things like that. And it's like mostly I watch a lot of movies, and the one thing I got tired of is watching so many Christian movies that you can pretty much predict from the very beginning. And that was, they were so, you know, and it's not to put them down. I'm very happy for what they did, but it would be, you automatically,
very predictable.
Very. So yeah. I wanted to really get down to the grit of the issues that we really deal with within life and what kind of mechanisms do we develop to get over these issues.
So then you started with fiction and just it blossomed into just instead of just a short story or a skit, it blossomed into a novel.
Correct. And I didn't realize how long it was until I actually got to the point of trying to produce it. And they would say, well, I mean, to publish it. And they was like, well, usually when we edit books, it's a little bit shorter than this. And that's when they was telling me that it was pretty much at the range of a novel. And really, my stories are a mixture of fact. But of course, I add fiction to it because what I don't want to do is take away somebody's ability to tell their own story. So these are people that I've met from primary all the way up that I've just kind of mixed up.
Yeah.
Pretty much mixed them up in a pot and come up with a story.
Well, you know, some of the best stories that we've heard have some facts in it. And so that makes the story relatable and real. So that's no surprise that you were able to glean some of the experiences that you've come across, the stories that you've heard to create your own. But you said that you wanted to get down to, you know, something that was gritty, something that was real. Do you think that in the church, those gritty and real things like the ones that you've expressed in your book, Twisted Wisdom, do you think those themes are ideas or concepts or things that we are kind of shying away from in the church?
I really do sometimes, because like I said, I mean, well, when it comes to the point of when I was able to actually attend church before everything that's going on right now, that was one of the things that was made aware. It's being aware of self, the things that are presented to us in life, how sometimes it's hard to get over those things. But I would find myself visiting a lot of places to where they skipped over it as if it didn't exist, or it's easier to just bury it. Because when I said sometimes I learned how to hide behind things, when I was growing up, because I grew up in the church, I knew how to hide behind church. So I knew how to look like I was saved, even though I wasn't following along the lines of personally doing exactly what it was supposed to. But I knew what to do in front of people to look like I was a certain type of person. But when it came to my personal relationship, that was all hidden behind the relationship that I saw other people have. That was before I developed my own relationship. And so that was one of the things this book really kind of brings out, the journey, because in my mind, I kind of twisted things up. It's like I would put together a system that seemed to work for somebody else, but it's not necessarily the system that would have worked for me. It was like going on a diet that my body wasn't calling for. And I was just doing it because it worked for somebody else. You know, it wasn't right. Designed for me. So that's pretty much what I write about now, is just to bring about awareness of things that we have a tendency to kick to the side and bury under, oh, I go to church.
Yeah.
Or, oh, I know somebody that's in church. Or this is just the spirit. Like, these are things that we just really have a tendency to bury, I believe. You know, and this is my personal opinion, but these are the things that I've seen buried quite often behind the cliches, I guess you would say, of church versus the personal relationship, which is actually what changes them.
See, and that's exactly what I think most people, they say they want, but when it comes down to actually living it, it's hard, because then you have to like you said before, get rid of the excuses that you put up for yourself. Because as long as you're following that prescription that the church has laid out for everybody, so everybody can't do this, everybody can't do that, everybody can't wear this, everybody can't wear that, look this certain way, have this certain type of lifestyle. When you strip away all of those guidelines that we put on the blanket of the entire church and actually try to live out a personal relationship, then that's where people kind of lose it, because they say, well, you know, it's my personal relationship with God. But then when you really dig down into the fact of it all, they really don't have a relationship with God. They're just following the script.
And, right.
Yeah. And I mean, in the church background that we've come from, because we come from similar backgrounds, in the context that we come out of, all you got to do is look a certain way and you good.
Right.
I mean, you can even be producing fruit of sin, fruit of deceit and deception, and won't nobody care as long as you look the part. And you hit something really on the head when people don't really want to express a personal relationship that causes them to really face themselves as opposed to the prescribed measures that the church put out. My goodness. I think if we could trust people enough as the church to be intelligent and to be integral enough to do it themselves. I hate to say it because I'm a preacher pastor. We want to control people.
Right.
And I
that's
think
what you say a lot of that. You're exactly right. I mean, and I'm not saying that everybody does it, but what right. I am saying is that it's more common to hide behind that.
So what are some of the books? I'm sorry. What are some of the themes that are expressed in this book, Twisted Wisdom, with your main characters and the situations that they're in? And not to give too much away, because we want people to actually go and buy the book and support the artist. So tell us some of the themes that are expressed in the book and what you can about the plot.
Okay, well, the way I would say it is pretty much you have a young lady that at a very young age, she was raised in very, very unfavorable circumstances. And after being raised in these circumstances, she run into a family at the age of about 10 that is willing to help her do everything she needs to do to be successful in life. They offer her all of the things that nobody has ever offered, from love to care to, you know, special attention, anything you can name that's needed. But right. in her mind, what she received caused her to feel like she needed to put on a completely different personality. She needed to take a new name, you know, all of these type of things. So they let her do it. So within the process, she was fine until she got into the business of meeting someone that was in the exact same situation she was before her life changed. And so everything she buried behind the information that they gave her, she had to face all over again. So it was almost like here she is, a 10-year-old child, all over again, having to deal with everything that's going on. So the way she deal with it actually is through a split personality. So that's what makes, until she's able to face herself. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty much the biggest. And that's that battle between trying to find out who you are. It's almost like, you know, when you first get saved, you're like, oh, I'm a new person. I'm a new creature. But then when you ever find yourself going back or doing something that you used to do, you feel like your whole life is over because you never, ever really dealt with what was really bothering you before you changed. You just buried it under I'm saved.
Right. You didn't actually present it to the Lord to deliver you from or to change you. You just hid it.
Right. It's just like, okay, well, now, you know, God saved me. This doesn't exist anymore. So it's like, instead of just specifically saying that in that manner, I just dealt with it from a general standpoint of how we deal with things in life. Like, once you feel like I'm on a new page of my life, a lot of times we'll just take on a completely different identity and act like none of that other part of life ever exists anymore.
Until we
have to face it.
My goodness, you helping somebody right now. That's good. That's good because I think that's the most common way that we deal with stuff as church folk. Because if we don't... You ain't got to know my business to pray for me, right?
Right.
And so, you know, one of the things that we hide behind is that unspoken prayer request where there is nobody in our life that we can be accountable to. There's nobody in our life that we can be honest with. And so, like you said, we just hide stuff until it resurfaces. And then, you know, even in my own life, there have been some things where I suppressed some things. And it bubbled up in my life to where, you know, I thought I was managing it until my slip showed, right?
Right.
And then when people get caught up, it's like, oh, shucks. I heard a preacher say a few weeks ago that whenever you see a preacher or a saint, for that matter, anybody, whenever you see them fall, they've been tripping for a long time.
Right.
Right. Right. And so... I think that theme in that book with your main character, Skylar, right? Her battling with that is something that anybody who has spent any time in church trying to fit in, I think that's the key. We have this idea of trying to fit into this church context that whatever we're in, whatever church we belong to, whatever denomination we're in, We don't want to stand out. We don't want to stick out. We just want to fit in, that we suppress the wrong things. And instead of just dealing with it up front and allowing God to heal us and deliver us, my goodness. Yeah, we hide it. That's good.
You know, we can even take it even farther. I mean, because you notice people that be part of certain boards in the world, or if they work certain jobs, or if they have certain standards, it's like they hide behind those standards as if they've never and never deal with the things that they were in before then. So when something come back and hit them, it's like it has completely taken over their whole life. And you find some of those people even homeless. Yep. You'll find them, you know, stranded out. You'll find different one of them on drugs. I mean, you find them in so many awkward positions because they buried instead of dealing with.
That's good. So you've kind of answered it, but if you want to speak even deeper to it, how has your faith guided you through this process of telling that story and, you know, developing these characters? How has your faith helped you in that?
It really got to the point of learning how to deal with me. The battle that I had with myself is what really helped it to where, like, my battle. I've had several people to live with me over time. I've had so many people to come to me over time. And it's like the biggest battles in life is when it comes to the point of you facing yourself to go to the next level. And that was that point to where I got so much information, but then learning that the attention of people if I go to you and I want to tell you something spiritual, or I want to tell you something about God, the attention only lasts so long. If you're not in a dire need at the particular time that I come to you, your attention is only so long. So it's like finding a way to be able to relate that information so that it can be understood all the way across the board to bring about awareness. And it gets to the point to where, you know, they can recognize certain things, but it's really about grasping, because my father used to tell us all the time. He said, to be honest, what you can't tell a person in the first 30 minutes, after that, they pretty much stop listening to you. He said, so don't sit up before people all day talking when they've only really heard a good 30 minutes of what you had to say. So within 30 minutes, you need to say as much as you can and make it as impactful as you can within that time.
Yeah. So then that is the cornerstone of your organization. Now, help me with the pronunciation. Is it Mispa Suave?
Mispa Suave.
Suave. Okay. Uh-huh. So tell us about Mispa Suave. And is that the cornerstone of your organization and what you're trying to do when you're helping people?
Yes, really. Mispa really has to do with the story between Jacob and LeBannon. Mm-hmm. When LeBannon wanted to go and kill Jacob and destroy him. When Jacob took all of his family and all of his goods and everything, and when he left. But what God told LeBannon when he left, he was like, don't touch him. Mm-hmm. And so the rock that was there, God, they were saying that the name of that rock was going to be Mispah because it means God stands between me and thee. Mm-hmm. And so Suve actually is a name that I saw on a menu in my dream. And I got up and looked it up and it said saves. So the way I looked at it, even though Mispah is Hebrew and Suve is French, it's like the watchman saves. Because it's like God standing between that one side of you that you left and you don't want to go back to. And so that's pretty much what I'm wanting to do with the lives. I want it to be a youth career center to where we'll be working with the youth to help them to develop their own individual needs, give them an opportunity to explore gifts that they have within themselves, not the ones that we want to give them, not the ones we feel like they should do to be successful. These are gifts that these children are actually born with. So I'm talking about anything from fashion to film to photography to, I mean, I want to build a full organization. I actually purchased a school here in Atlanta. It's the old Booker T. Washington School, and I'm working to get it fully renovated, which takes a little time to get everything done. But once I get it fully renovated, it'll be a full career center that will be able to offer an opportunity for them to have hands-on experience with every gift that a child has, from art to music to, you know, anything that's out there. And okay, that's what we're looking for.
That's good. And I like that you said that not the career paths that we want people to go down, but the ones that they're passionate about.
Right.
I'm a teacher. And one of the things that I've heard said over and over again in our community, when a kid says that they want to be a teacher, folks will say, well, ain't no money in it. First of all, that's a lie. That's a lie, first of all. And if you apply yourself, there's plenty of money to be made in education. But why would you want to deter a child from something that they want to do, especially something as honorable as teaching? And so, you know, if a child wants to make movies, if you watch movies, why would you deter them? You know, I'm not knocking Brother Tyler Perry, but, you know, somebody had to encourage him to make his movies, even though I don't like him that much. Somebody had to encourage him along the way in order for him to do what he's doing. So that's an excellent mission that you have, to empower the youth to pursue their dreams. And how can people get in contact with you? What's your social media's handles? And if they wanted to even donate to your cause for Mispa, how can they contact you?
Well, I have a website for it. It's the mizpahsuve.com, which is MIZPAHSAUVE.com. And that's where they can actually do donations and everything from that page. But when it comes to anything that have to do with books, or I'm working on kind of doing some blogs here and there. All of that can be found under victoriafallscott.com. I even have them. I will be posting them on my Facebook page more so. That'd be something I'll be working on, you know, here lately. I've been kind of working on getting that together. So that will be the point on that. And you can also find my book on there and on Amazon as well.
Don't worry if you couldn't write any of that down. I will add that to the show notes. Victoria, thank you so much for joining us. You took me deeper than I expected to go. And I appreciate your insight. I appreciate your talent and your gift. And you continue to bless the people in your lives and those that you come across in the great way that you are already doing.
Okay. And thank you so much for, you know, taking the time out to even consider me. It actually it means a lot.
Yes, ma'am. Every week we end the podcast by opening up the doors of the church for anyone who needs to come down and repent. And this week I'm calling on Disney, Pixar, and any other animated movie maker. I found this on the Pass the Mic podcast Facebook page, which, by the way, if you enjoy conversations about race and religion, I suggest you find Pass the Mic anywhere you listen to this podcast. But I found this on their Facebook page, and according to the Erden Zickaby Arts and Animation, there is a plight for minority representation in animated movies. I never really noticed this because we are so hungry for representation when it comes to the arts and when it comes to the visual arts, especially in movies and TV, that we tend to just take anything and celebrate it. But I never noticed the fact that Princess Tiana was the first Black Disney princess, and she only spent about 40% of the movie playing an African-American princess. For 62% of the movie, she was a frog. And consider Will Smith's movie Spies in Disguise that came out last year, where he plays an African-American spy who's transformed into a pigeon. He spends most of his time on screen as a pigeon. Later this year, Pixar will release a movie called Soul, where a Black musician is turned into a blob of a ghost. And it's not just Black representation. Consider The Emperor's New Groove, which was released in 2000, and Brother Bear, which was released in 2003, where Inca and Alaskan Native human protagonists spend most of their time in the film as animals. Peter Bradshaw wrote that Disney may wish to reach out to people of color, but the color green wasn't what we had in mind. While there is such a huge hunger for representation, we must hold these studios accountable for actually giving us proper representation. And I know that there's a lot of studies that say that international moviegoers don't necessarily want to see people of color in the main protagonist role. However, how are they going to know our stories? How are they going to get used to seeing our faces and having empathy for our people if we don't push for proper representation in all forms of media? And by the way, stop using the bogus excuse of market research for reasons not to create these stories, for reasons not to create these movies, because if you look at Marvel's Black Panther, you can see that there is a huge market for stories that put our faces in the center. So we've got to do better. We don't have to accept anything that they throw to us. Let's demand our proper representation. And if we can't get it, let's create it ourselves. Well, that's it. Thank you so much for listening this week, and I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Shout out to Victoria Falls Scott for such a powerful conversation. Make sure that you visit her website, victoriafallscott.com, to support her written work, or mspasuve.com to support her service work. All of those links can be found in the show notes. You can follow me on any social media platform at I Am Derek J. Murphy. Well, except for Snapchat, because I don't do that. Make sure that you visit my website, DerekJMurphy.com. That's DerekJMurphy.com. And if you enjoy this show, make sure that you click subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast and leave a review. Let somebody else know that you enjoy this show. And if you don't like it, just act like you didn't hear it. It's okay. We'll be fine. So enjoy your week. Hope that you know that God loves you best, and I love you best I can. And we'll see you next time.